show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Flagstaff, Arizona. It's beautiful out here, about 7,000 feet. I am Troy Olson, of course, joined in Lawrence, Kansas, home of the Final Four. Oh, wait, no.
Hey. It's not necessary.
And then, of course, from Brookside, because he hasn't sold his house yet, Jeffrey Herr. How you doing, Jeff?
Oh, I'm good. Good to be back. It's been a while, for me, anyway.
It has been a while for you. It's been about 8 days, I think, for Mike and I, too. So it was a hell of a week, let me tell you. I do not recommend moving halfway across the country.
I don't plan on it, but thank
Point
you.
Point taken.
Yeah, it was, or if you do, just figure out a way to take nothing with you. So, especially not a whole lot of family. But that's another story for another day. So the season's underway, and it's actually not been too bad. But my goodness, people get excited when a team starts off 0-2.
Oh my goodness! There was a couple days that I just had to shut down my Twitter tab on my computer just because I don't know. I mean, we're four games in. The Royals won today. They won yesterday. They lost the first two games. There it is. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. It's you know, anything at this point. You're just kind of getting caught up in the small sample size and the noise and everything, and I want to draw conclusions this early, but I think it's just too soon to do that, and I think a lot of people were trying to extrapolate way too soon.
The problem with the Twitter sphere for the Royals, and I love Twitter. Yeah. I've been much removed from it since my job I don't have a way to keep it up anymore. It just doesn't look good when you're temping somewhere and you have Twitter running in the background. It's never a good idea.
Probably not a good idea.
So I don't ever have that up, but there's a lot of people that have made themselves famous, have gotten credit on the radio and other places for being negative. And one of them used to be on this show, in all honesty. And I don't know if he listens or not, and if he does, he can tell me how wrong I am. But I think it's very beneficial for Fake Ned that this team be bad. As long as this team's bad, it's beneficial to him. And there's people that have been called the best on Twitter because of what they do with the negativity. And if it is what it is, and I think there's a lot of people that have made their way based on this team being bad. So they want this team to be bad because that is where their fame lies. And then there's people like us that don't care. We just want good baseball. I mean, I called this team a 500 team. I'm by far, of the RoyalsPodcast.com folks, us and the Pine Tar Press guys, me, the guy that used to wear tights and a cape to a baseball game, is the most known on this team of any of us.
What did you say you predicted them to be? Are you predicting 500?
I was right at 500.
If you're considering yourself the most optimistic, then that means somebody didn't read my 610 article in which I predicted the Royals to go 85 and 77.
So no, I'm saying I'm the most pessimistic, Jeff.
What'd you say?
I'm the most pessimistic.
Oh, I thought you said optimistic. I'm sorry. No, you cut out for like a millisecond, and I didn't hear the
– Yeah, you just hear the mystic. You don't know where – it was
my
mystical.
Bad, and I apologize.
No, I don't think this group is going to be good enough, and I don't think they would have been good enough with Will Myers. This team, it wasn't going to turn the corner like that and become a 500 team. I cannot believe I just used turn the corner.
Jeff used turn the corner earlier today too.
It's just how we're rolling now.
I was being flippant though, so that's okay for me.
Right? Yeah, you were trolling me.
Moving on. Royals are now. I got this really cool little add-on for for Android phones. I think it's like MLB Magic Number or something like that. It's a widget, and you can produce multiple widgets to post. So because I live in the land of the Diamondbacks, I posted a line of them where they are back and what their current record is and what their streak is, and then I posted where they are in the wild card. Did the same thing for the Royals and the Rockies because those are the two teams I actually follow. And according to my little deal here, the Royals are a half a game back of first place.
Mm-hmm.
And a half a game back of the wild card. So even after an 0-2 start, they are just fine.
There we go. They're 500.
If we're going to overreact about an 0-2 start, we can overreact about the fact that they're a half a game out of first place.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago, right after we started the show, it was 2011, and the Royals started. There was a four-game series against the Angels, and they won 3 out of 4. And I think after that fourth game, we did the show, and we're talking about the Royals being in first place. I vaguely remember us talking about what it would take to stay in first place. Little did we know that, it wasn't meant to be. But
I remember having to apologize to Chris Getz and Ned Yost, though, and I want the Ned Yost one back. Chris Getz can keep my apology. He hasn't totally sucked, but I still hate Ned Yost. But anyways, before we got started, we were talking about people overreacting, and this is what Jeff and Mike had to say about that.
Stupid.
Screw that.
Why would anybody do that?
So, yeah, I thought that was a little overreaction to you guys, but, hey, I guess, if it works, it works.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to throw that piece in everywhere I can all the time.
Anytime you can. Yeah, I think it just went too far on Twitter. I think there are a lot of I like to be right. I like to be critical when I see something to be critical about, and, it's always nice to be vindicated by something, but I think there's a point where you can stop being critical because you're observing something, and when you start looking explicitly for things that fit what you're critiquing. I was talking to Dave Lesky, a friend of ours, earlier today, and it's there's a saying, it's like if you give a little kid a hammer, he's going to think everything needs to be hit with it or something like that. And that's kind of what it is. You find reasons to support what statement you're trying to make. And, you see a lot of times where these people, they'll harp up on something when it goes bad. But if it goes well, nobody says anything. Like during the World Baseball Classic, everybody was talking, Eric Hosmer would ground out, and somebody would be tweeting me. He's like, "You worried yet? Worried yet?" I'm not hearing that from anybody after today.
Still am. Uh-huh. I'm not a believer yet.
That's fine. You need to watch today, though. Every single at bat, he looked great.
Well, I haven't. Obviously, we're recording this at 5:48 Arizona time, and you have to call it Arizona time because they're in their own freaking time zone. And so, I haven't had a chance to do anything but get home and record this show. Meanwhile, you two are over there at 7:30 at night, waiting for me to get home so we can get this done.
Yep.
Going back in time to the beginning of the season, like we talked about, they opened up 1-2 in Chicago. Shields had 6-inning pitch, 1 run allowed. Santana looked like Santana, gave us some home runs, but he struck out a bunch, and then Guthrie looked pretty good, all in all. Of those three, who looked the worst, or who are you really worried about, and who are you getting what you expected from in a very small sample size?
Well, I mean, Shields is probably the safest guy. He's got the longest track record of being very good. Obviously, they went out and traded Will Myers for him, so he's going to have the highest expectations. Santana gave up 39 homers last year, and for him to come out in his first start and give up three, that's not a very good sign. And then Guthrie, I don't think he's going to strike out. That's probably going to be a season high for strikeouts in a game because he's just not a strikeout pitcher. But he pitched really, really well. And, everything was working all right. I was never really worried about Guthrie that much, but Santana definitely has a lot. He's got the most question marks of those three. So, I got to kind of stick with that. And his performance didn't really answer any of those questions aside from being able to strike out some guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, pretty much on the same lines. I mean, you can't discount the fact that the year that Santana had last year and the start that he's off to, I mean, I think that makes it the most troublesome for him. And I thought it was a good move for Yost and the Royals to put sorry, my cat is going crazy on the computer here. I thought it was a good move for them to put him at the two spot in the rotation, because right after the Royals traded for him, they had, I think it was 6'10", they had somebody from like an Angels play-by-play guy or something that came on and said that Ervin Santana, part of his struggles last year were because of his attitude. You know, he didn't outwardly show it because he seems to be a pretty good guy, but he was kind of a little upset about being sent to a put down in the rotation.
What is happening,
Jeff? What is going on over there? Are your animals finally taking over?
They've took over for a long time. So he's
Emma.
He's getting an it's. He's a he's just a.
It's what, Animal Farm podcast
that,
edition
on air. But no, I mean I think for me the biggest takeaway it's kind of like what Mike was saying. I mean you definitely can't panic. It's way too early for that. I completely agree with that. I mean I also think that you cannot ignore what the Royals have been in the past, and while a team from 10 years ago has nothing to do with this team, last year's team has a lot to do with this team. With the exception of the pitching staff, it's basically the same starting position players. And, you know, there was like, oh, you know, it's when Jonathan Broxton beans home the walk-off run. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's just one game. Well, 12 games later, the Royals are 3-14, and they're just never be able to dig themselves out of a hole. So you have a young team, and you have a team that's done, that's kind of folded under the weight of a possible losing streak before. I don't think you can ignore that, but it is too early, and it was too early to make any sort of snap judgments. And they've climbed right back out of it. They've won two in a row. So it's, you know, what happened last year is hopefully not going to happen again, but you know, it doesn't make them a playoff team right now either. But the couple of things that I thought were interesting is people talk about, I mean, some of the struggles the Royals had at the plate seemed like in the first couple games, it was kind of everybody's worst fear being imagined, where it's just like, oh, they're not taking a lot of pitches, they're not working the count, they're not getting on base, which, I mean, I think it might have seemed like that when you just look at it, but when you look at like the box score, I mean, they had plenty of base runners. They've been taking, I mean, two or three, four walks a game almost for every game this year. So I mean, I think they've actually done a better job than it looks like, because you have people like Jeff Francoeur and Salvador Perez, who is as good as Perez is, he's a free swinger type, and you can't, you know, that is what it is. But I think when it comes down to it, those first two games, they lost by a combined 3 runs, and they had bases loaded with one out in both games and came away with nothing. So you've got the good and the bad there. You've got the good and that they were in a position to possibly take over and win those games. And then the bad, which is they had that opportunity and they squandered it, but they didn't today. So, I mean, there's way too much left to take much out of it, but there, I mean, it's just too early in the season to draw too many conclusions.
At least they won today, though. I mean, 13-4 win today, and everybody hit. Gordon gets
after, and more importantly, after falling behind 4-0, they came back.
Yep. So they're back to 2-2. Like I said, just a half a game out of first at the time we were recording this show. So I mean, they're World Series bound. I don't see anything. I don't see anything stopping us.
2-2 does it.
So. Of course, that's facetiousness and
yeah, and it goes both ways. You can't, you know, Eric Hosmer was 4-for-5 today, and I'm a big fan of Eric Hosmer's, obviously, as we've established. But coming into the game, he was 1-for-9. So you can't draw a lot of conclusions out of one game performance, just like you can't from the 3 games beforehand. So you can't just flip out and say, oh, well, he's completely back, because maybe he's not. He looked very good today. And he's looked pretty good all season so far. He's taken 5 pitches per plate appearance, which is very good. But again, it's 4 games. He could easily erase that progress tomorrow with an 0-for-4 and see seven pitches. So, you know, tomorrow is another day for the optimist side, and it's another day for the pessimist side.
And we'll see what goes on. I enjoyed us winning in Philly, and it was so funny, too, because I mentioned that on Twitter that I'm temping right now until I get something for sure here in Arizona, and my first temp position is out at a propane company, and so Mike is just giddy about this because he gets to use every King of the Hill reference he can come up with, and so
propane and propane accessories.
I just wish sometimes that people could see the email chain between the three of us and David Leske, who we added on just for humor's sake.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned that I had sold propane and propane accessories, and the email chain just blew up. And then today I got that drop in on Twitter where I had walked, I left my computer, we were down, and then I came back and right as Billy Butler got walked, which was the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen in baseball, walking Billy Butler to get to Alex Gordon.
That was a weird play, too.
That was odd. I mean, that's not even National League Baseball. That's just weird. I mean, it was like they were committed to walking that nine slot no matter who was in it. And they walked it, and they changed pitchers, and then Gordon gets the triple, which was fantastic. And so I was watching there, and we went ahead 6-4, and I got a chuckle out of the fact that Bruce Chen was in line for the win. And then I wandered off to sell some more propane and propane accessories, and I come back, and it's 10-4. And then, of course, 13-4, the final score today. So I was very happy to see the Royals look that good against a team as good as Philly. I mean, Philly's going to be a pretty good team. They're going to be a contender in the Washington Nationals division. So it's the Nationals and everybody else, I think.
It definitely is the Washington Nationals division, and it will be for a very long time.
Yeah.
The way they're doing it, they're doing it right. So, we'll see about that. And we'll be right back after this.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vaults. Caught our first segment, and we were talking about the open to the season. But because this is the Kansas City Baseball Vault, we're not always about the Royals. We want to take a look at Kansas City baseball history, and I can't think of a better person to bring up than Aaron Stille, who you can follow him on Twitter at Royal_Heritage. He's written for I-70 Baseball. He's also got his own blog at kcbbh.blogspot.com. And the reason we're talking with him is because on the 13th of April, Aaron's going to be presenting at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. He's going to do a talk about Jackie Robinson and his time with the Monarchs. Aaron, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys doing?
Well, it was a good win today.
Yes.
I'll say that much. That was nice.
Kind of so funny, I think, only the fourth game of the season, but we kind of needed one like that, it felt like.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing everybody hit, that was fantastic to get. So let's talk about this presentation at the Negro Leagues Museum. You know, there's a lot going on this weekend. The 11th is going to be the premiere event, and then the 12th, the movie's actually out to the general public. And so as part of this, you know, you get to present this talk. So, you know, a lot of people know about Jackie Robinson playing for the Dodgers. That's just the story.
Check, check.
And a few might know that he was with the Monarchs, but we're talking about the 1945 season. In general, you don't have to give all the details away because we want people to go listen to you at the museum. But in general, how did he do in 1945 with the Kansas City Monarchs?
Yeah, if you read a lot of the literature about it, you get the impression that he, you know, he was pretty good. He had an all right year. But kind of the line you hear a lot is, you know, he wasn't near the best in the league or anything, but he just was the right guy. You know, kind of, he had the different background, the personality to take and everything, which I think is correct, but kind of going back and researching it, I think that really undersells how good he actually played that year. I think he was really one of the elites that year. He, I think he hit probably somewhere between 340 to 400, somewhere in that range. My best guess of what his OPS was probably like right at 1,000, which is, you know, like MVP type level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he was just incredible right off the get-go with the Monarchs. He was a rookie, so I think a lot of the Negro Leaguers, you know, they maybe hadn't caught up with how good he was yet, if they hadn't seen him a lot, or they were, you know, a little put off maybe that it was a rookie that was selected. They had a lot of established stars who were probably a little too old to start out, you know, going into the majors at their age. So I don't know. It's true he was the right guy, personality-wise and everything, but kind of what I found is he was also just, you know, an incredible player in 45, too.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, you know, they would have thought back then maybe that it would have been somebody like a Satchel Paige or any of the bigger-name guys, and then here's Jackie Robinson. But I think you're right. I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers or dug those up, but...
Check.
Yep.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. But if you look at Jackie Robinson and just historically, I mean, wasn't he a four-letter athlete at UCLA? I mean, he was a track star and football star and everything, so...
Yeah, I
can't imagine that he wasn't just outstanding the first time he stepped foot on a baseball field, too, regardless of being a rookie or otherwise.
Right. Yeah, well, he did just seem to have that ability. He could just play any sport and be incredible at it. But he had not played very much baseball for several years, as far as I can tell. He'd been in the service for several years.
Right.
And he tried to actually join a military team and was turned away because he was black. From that regard, just that he hadn't played very much, it's just amazing when you can step in and, you know, start hitting good pitching immediately, but he did, so. Yeah, he just seemed to be that incredible all-around athlete that could just do anything. He played a little pro football, he probably was good enough to go to the NFL if he wanted to go that way.
And when he's coming to Kansas City, you know, it's a place with the jazz heritage, and then the Negro Leagues were here, and a lot of that was established in Kansas City, and a pretty good, black community and everything. But did he find any kind of resistance just in general in the city? Was it more so that, or at least, I guess it, I'm thinking in regards to when, you know, some of the talk of him possibly going to the major leagues and signing with a major league team. Were there any incidents coming up to that, or were there any that, you know, in his time while he was in the Negro Leagues and in Kansas City that came up?
I'm not aware of anything like with teammates or with anybody in Kansas City. There wasn't a lot of speculation that he was going to be the one chosen until it actually happened. And when it happened, I think he was pretty much gone. Like, I don't think he came back to the Monarchs after he agreed to play for the Montreal Royals, the Brooklyn Dodgers farm team the next year. So, you know, he wasn't around really for anybody to react directly to him. There was a little controversy in Kansas City because the Monarchs owners were, initially they came out upset with Branch Rickey for poaching him, you know, saying that he was their player and they at least deserved compensation of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't a very good PR look to be upset with any aspect of the color line finally being broken. So they had to pretty quickly back away from that and say it was all right. Satchel Paige, the word, you know, some people, some sources say that he was really stung and bitter that it wasn't him chosen. But I think, how about publicly, you know, you can find quotes, you know, directly from the time. He was just super graceful about it, kind of cool, kind of speaks well to his character, really, because I wish I had the quote right in front of me, but he said something like, we couldn't have picked a better guy, and Jackie's going to do great, all this kind of stuff. So I think mostly it was, you know, people in Kansas City were thrilled. The owners wish they could have gotten a little for him, probably, but other than that, it was fairly smooth.
Right, and like you said, it's pretty tough to put a lot of resistance to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, from what we've seen, and, you know, I don't want to reference the movie trailer too much because I'm not sure how, you know, vastly historically accurate it is and how much is just drama, but it did seem like that character of Jackie Robinson was one of the things that Ranch Ricky was specifically looking for, and not necessarily the absolute best player, but, you know, as the quote in the trailer is, you know, he's looking for somebody who has the guts not to fight back, knowing that there's going to be, you know, this kind of this anger and this hatred from some people. Is that accurate to what you found in your research?
Yeah, I want to say that line comes directly from Jackie's autobiography. So according to Jackie, that was, you know, exactly one of the things Ricky said in that meeting. You know, Jackie first says, I wish I could remember exactly, but something like, you're looking for someone too scared to fight back, or something like that. And he said, no, I'm looking for someone with the guts not to fight back. And it was, you know, Jackie, you know, Brian Tricky was right that Jackie could do that. He could just hold his tongue, basically, for 2 years and take terrible abuse. But it was sort of ironic that Jackie was the right guy to do it, because he did have a terrible temper. He was really hot-headed, really, naturally, if he was, you know, at all crossed or anything. Just apparently super competitive on the field, you know, would play rough and go crazy if Carlton goes his way and things like that. But, yeah, he had the strength to just bury that for a couple of years.
Interesting. So what's, you know, for me, I'm a nerd and everything too, and joined Sabre this year, just at the start of the year, so, and have a history degree. So I'm interested in kind of what kind of things did you look at in preparing for this event at the museum? Was it primarily, like, how much did you dig into, you know, the old newspapers and you know, how much was online? I'm just curious about the process and the methods that you went through.
Yeah, I started reading, you know, more modern tellings, you know, everything I could find. There's not a ton about his year with the Monarchs. He touches on it pretty briefly in his autobiography. Probably the best, more modern source is a biography by Arnold Rampersand, this guy Jackie Robinson, a biography that has a really good chapter on his year with the Monarchs. But this is several years ago, but I kind of felt like I'd read as much as I could about the subject from modern sources, and I still, you know, I wanted to know, like, every game they played and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I started off, the Kansas City Call is still around, actually, but is also around way back from early 1900s, kind of a paper in Kansas City geared toward the black community, and they covered the Monarchs fairly well. So, yeah, I wanted to... So I started there with, as far as with the contemporary sources from 45, and unfortunately that means microfilm, which anybody's had to look at microfilm, that is not a fun process.
No, it's but, not.
No. But so yeah, down at the downtown library, I started going through every single Kansas City Call from 45 and making scans of all the Monarchs coverage, and started a spreadsheet, like, with the schedule and as many results as I could find and all that. And then I managed online. I was able to look at, like, some other black papers from the time, the Chicago Defender, the Pittsburgh Courier, papers like that. Trying to piece together as much as I could from the season. I sent out an email to the Sabre email list, and that was really cool because I got, got help from several Negro League historians. So, it's kind of a blend of going back and reading all those primary sources from 45, and also blending in, the work of other researchers who published more recent works.
Get a hold of whatever you can. So the event is at 10:30 in the morning on the 13th at the Negro League Baseball Museum down there at the historic 18th Mine. And it's free. Is that right? It's free with limited seating.
Yeah, the event says it's free. A lot of times they will charge you at least museum admission, but it sounds like that day it's just all free. So.
And even so, if you want to stick around and look through the museum, it's definitely something somebody should probably do anyhow.
Yes.
It's one of the treasures of baseball. I love that place. It's like every time I see something new when I visited the museum, so I think that's great. Let's shift gears a little. Let's talk a little bit about the Royals since it is the start of the season and everything. What's your prediction of their record this year?
I stuck it at 83 and 79, but I don't know. That's just a wild guess. I could see a wide range happening. So that's kind of the middle of what I'm expecting.
I think that's about where we're all at. I think Troy's, I believe, the most pessimistic at 500, which is strange because, as he mentioned earlier, he's the guy who wore the cape and tights, which doesn't make sense to me. And what about any breakout candidate do you see? I mean, it's a younger team, and most of these guys are kind of well-known as being young players, but is there, do you see Mike Moustakas or Eric Hosmer bouncing back, or Salvador Perez continuing with the offensive success he's had the last, season and change?
Yeah, I mean, all three of those guys are huge, obviously, and hugely important how they perform. I don't know. I can't say I don't feel 100% that Hosmer's going to bounce back, but I, feel maybe 75% that he's going to bounce back. Moose, I don't know. I think he will maybe have a slightly, I think it may be similar numbers to the end of last year. Hopefully a little more consistent season, hopefully slightly better. His inability to walk, I think, is a problem. He's really got to hit for power to be valuable. So hopefully he'll hit the ball hard this year.
I was going to say, what's wrong with his ability to walk? He can't put one foot in front of the other?
It's a lot more than that. All right. Well, Troy just broke the interview.
I say one thing. I've been just sitting here listening, chilling, and all of a sudden it goes silent.
It's like that's.
Sorry for the interruption earlier too. Apparently my microphone went dead, which is why Mike brought us back into the segment. And it's a brand new headset. I don't know what the heck happened, but we're back up and running. So
we'll explain what a walk is in baseball to you after the show, should
I? Yeah, there we go. Aaron, how much are you still writing? Are you still writing quite a bit on your own?
Not very much. I stopped writing at I-70 quite a while ago, and I thought I'd just kind of do my own blog whenever I had the time and the motivation, and there's not been a lot of time lately, so it's been pretty sporadic on my blog.
Personally, I think you should write for Kings of Kaufman. But
so am I.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I've approached Aaron about four or five times about that.
Just continue the coup.
He doesn't have time, and that's understandable. And Aaron just moved to Minnesota. If people didn't know that, so that's another thing. So as Troy, I'm sure you would attest, moving takes a lot of the time too. So it's fine.
Yeah, it's been crazy, but going down a little bit here, maybe.
Well, hope so.
Yeah.
At least you moved to an AL city, so you can still see the Royals.
That is a true consolation, actually.
I moved to the land where nobody apparently supports the sports teams around here. You can get tickets to any game for cheap around here.
Yeah. Are the Royals going to Arizona this year?
No.
Nope.
All right. Well, Aaron, thank you for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Please, folks, go out and check out this event at the Negro League Museum, and you can find much more, I believe, on the Negro League site, and you can call and make a reservation at 816-221-1920. And Aaron will be glad to see you there, and he'll sign autographs and shake your hand. You can meet the famous Aaron Stille. But follow, if you don't already, follow him on Twitter, @Royal_Heritage. That's a singular Royal, @Royal_Heritage on Twitter. He's a great follow. He's one of the best. So thanks again, Aaron, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. What a great interview there with Aaron Stille. Great guy. I've met him, ran the Buck 2.2 with him a couple of times. He's somebody that just truly believes in the mission of the Negro League Museum, and it is a great place, and it's really struggling. So I hope it finds its way. I guess the All-Star events weren't quite as positive for the museum as they had hoped. So hopefully they'll be able to continue to have these kind of events and continue to stay open.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the place, and it's a really cool space, and, you know, everything in there is great, and it's $8. I mean, what are you going to do with $8? You can blow more than that, you know, having two beers at the end of the workday or something. I mean, save the money, go down there, check it out. It's a lot of really great history, it's a lot of really great stories, and it's a lot of really important stuff about not just baseball history, but American history. It's, you know, the timeline follows a lot of the same steps in American history regarding segregation as it does with, you know, baseball and history. The timelines overlap. So I think it's something that, you know, every baseball fan should check out at some point. And, you know, people in the area especially should go check it out. For the longest time, I've been living in Lawrence for a long time, and, you know, it's maybe 45, 50 minutes away from me. And I hadn't even really been there until about 2 years ago, but since I've been like three other times. So,
well, and the thing is, there's a lot of really neat events that go on there, but you can become a season ticket holder for $20-$25, might even be that much, and get discounts at the events that they have. But like, I spent $75, which was the discounted price, to go meet Frank White, who I'd met many, many times, and Ozzie Smith. And of course, I walk up and Frank White goes, "Hey, Ozzie, this guy wears tights and a cape to baseball games." I'm like, "Dang it, one of my heroes," and Frank White's just blowing me out of the water. But it was $75, and I got to meet him. They signed a ball for me, and it was a really neat experience. Got some great pictures, and, you know, which are still up on Facebook to this day. But, you know, one thing about the Negro League Museum is it's definitely a place that if you live in Kansas City or you visit Kansas City and you're a baseball fan at all, and obviously listening to this show, you're a baseball fan, you've got to go there at least once and just make it part of your day. And, I mean, the Geddy Lee display.
Oh, yeah.
Geddy Lee Rush. I mean, he donated all these baseballs that his dad had collected over the years from all these Negro Leaguers, and they're just incredible. So go check that out. Last week at the very end of the show, we had a trivia. Oh, I was going to say, I screwed this all up. Maybe I'll cut this out. Maybe I won't. But I was going to say, you said $8 is less than it costs for two beers after work. I don't know where these people are drinking. If they would go to Kelly's Westport Inn, happy hour will get you two beers under $8. I'll promise you that. In fact, I think it's two beers under $6.
There you go.
So that's where you want to be having that. Now, if you'd like to go to Kelly's for free, we can help you out with that. I don't know if nobody listened to the end of the show last week or they just don't want to send me emails or what, but last week we asked a trivia question. The trivia question – and Jeff wasn't here, so I don't know. Jeff probably didn't listen either. So we'll ask Jeff the trivia question and see if he can give the answer. But last week we said, who is the longest-running member of the Royals the player with the most tenure in the Royals organization? Not on the big league club, but in the Royals organization, what player had the most tenure? And for extra credit, what two players had it up until this year that are now gone from the team? Can you get that off the top of your head, Jeff?
Off the top of my head, longest tenure with the Royals, I'd guess maybe Alex Gordon. That's probably not right. Chris Getz.
Yeah. Nope. My fiance's over here yelling Alex Gordon, and Alex Gordon is not correct. Chris Getz is not correct. Chris Getz, I mean, he just joined the team not long ago. The player with the longest tenure is currently in Omaha, and that's Irving Falu.
Tony Abreu, is that who it is?
I believe it's Irving Falu.
It is Irving Falu.
I'm sorry, that's what I was thinking. Irving Falu, that is who I was thinking of. I don't know where that name came from, but I promise that's what I was thinking of.
And then for extra credit, the two that have left this year that were longest-running members before that, Jeff, any shots on those?
Two that have left this year? Oh, jeez.
They left in this offseason.
One of them is going to be really tough, yeah.
The one that's really tough is Mario Lassone. He never made it to the big leagues.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He had been with the organization like 10 years. And then the other one, of course, my favorite Royal, Mitch Meyer.
Oh, Mitch Meyer.
And he's apparently with the Red Sox now. So hopefully we'll see him in the big leagues with the Red Sox. But yeah, anybody have a trivia question off the top of their head they want to ask? Because I don't have one this year.
No.
But
I wasn't prepared for this. Nobody informed me that I needed a trivia question. I can find one.
If we find one by the end of the show, we'll have it.
Oh, it's not going to be by the end of the show. It'll be the next show.
So the next show, we'll have another trivia question. We'll try to do it early in the show, but you got to listen all the way to the end because throughout the season, we'll have chances for you to win $10 to Kelly's. The whole I get as part of my partnership with them, I get free Kelly. We have had it for events that we've done at Kelly's, and we've bought people drinks there, but a lot of times people don't come up and talk to me about the show, and so I don't buy them drinks. So that was always the deal, is if you were a listener, you just had to come up and tell me, and I'd buy you a drink. And so this year we're going to do it a little differently because we're not going to be able to have as many things at Kelly's. We'll do one in October most likely when I'm back for some wedding stuff, and then definitely probably have one in December, around December as well. If I can make time around my wedding, we'll probably go out there for a night before the wedding. So there'll be a chance to get some more Kellys coming up and a chance to join us out at Kellys as well. A quick wrap around the minor leagues. Mike, what have we got so far in the second day of the minor league season?
Well, there's not a whole lot. Like you said, it's the second day. The Storm Chasers and the Naturals both lost yesterday. That would be Thursday, the 4th. They both lost. Wilmington and Lexington were both rained out. Today, it was a pretty nice little batch of starters. I mean, you had Kyle Zimmer on the mound for Wilmington. He threw 5 innings. He struck out 8. He gave up 2 hits. Unfortunately, they were both home runs, but Wilmington does lead that game as of right now. Bubba Starling made his full season debut. He went 1-for-4, but struck out 3 times. Adalberto Mondesi went 1-for-4 as well. Unfortunately, both of those guys also had errors out in the field. Mondesi got caught stealing. So it's going to be a little bit of adjustment for them. Brian Brickhouse threw 4 innings, struck out 7, gave up no earned runs, but he did take the loss because Lexington did not score. Jason Adams getting hit around a little bit in Northwest Arkansas. And so far, the Naturals have 1 hit. So a little rough start for the minor league players, but not a lot to be worried about yet. It's, the wins aren't really important. It's about executing and doing things the right way. So we'll have a better idea as the middle of the season comes around and they start kind of shifting people around to different levels and things like that. But, you know, it's really cool to be able to look back and look at the prospects again. So, you know, hopefully Bubba Starling and Mondesi are tearing it up, and Kyle Zimmer, you know, comes out and throws some more innings, gets some more strikeouts, and Jason Adam bounces back.
I think for me, if we're flashing forward a few years, what I anticipate being the most fun is looking at Alberto Mondesi and seeing him develop, because especially after hearing someone like Jason Parks when he came on our show and just went nuts over the kid, and kid is exactly what he is. I think he might still be 17 years old. Is that right? I'm not sure.
Yep.
How old he is, but he's super young, and I mean, especially for that level too. I mean,
right.
Playing Lexington as a 17-year-old, I mean, that's pretty incredible.
There are 22-year-olds at that level, so yeah.
So I mean, Kyle Zimmer is what, 21? He's not there, but he's only one level above. I mean, he's going to move pretty quick through the system,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for me, that's going to be the most exciting thing. Like, I mean, he could be a guy that's like a Jurickson Profar. That's Jason Park's words. Those aren't ours, you know.
Yeah.
So to have that kind of player in Kansas City, or not technically in Kansas City, but in the system, and that excitement of you know, him possibly coming up at some point and having a major, major impact on the squad, I think it's going to be fun to see him reach that point, assuming he ever does. It's no guarantee. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, all the reports seem to be good. So Bubba Starling is – that, for me, is more of a sense of dread than it is of excitement. But that's another topic for another day.
You know, and I've been down on Bubba for a while, and it's not just wishful thinking as I wear my Nebraska Husker shirt. But I do see him, and I think Jeff was actually the first one to say this. I actually see him playing baseball in 3 years, or football in 3 years, and not baseball, because I just don't think he makes it. I just don't know that he has the mind. I don't know that he has the right sense of the game, you know? And I hope I'm wrong. I want him to be leading the Royals in home runs with 50 every year for the next 10 years, you know? And I think if he does make it, he is going to re-sign here no matter who offers him money, because he's going to want to stay in Kansas City. And he's already getting paid well.
I think when I having no knowledge of Bubba Starling personally, he seems like one of those people who he doesn't love either sport. He loves playing sports, you know, so I mean, that was always kind of the question. Does he love baseball? Because baseball, I mean, in order to be successful at that high a level at any sport, you have to have an incredible drive, an incredible passion, an incredible skill. And baseball, I think, might even be the most out of all of them in terms of how much you have just that kind of mental desire like you were talking about, Troy. And that's always been the question with him. When it comes to baseball, does Bo Starling have that mental drive to be the best baseball player that he can be? And I don't know that he does. And that's, you know, I mean, from things you've heard and just from, you know, everything else, just I don't know that he does. And I think he'll be – he seems a lot like kind of a Pat White almost, who is back in the NFL now. After being drafted and playing in the NFL, then dropping out and actually coming to the Royals organization to try and play baseball, and then back into football again. I mean, I could see Bubba Starling having some sort of a career path like that, not necessarily coming back to baseball or anything, but, you know, 2015, he might be starting for the Nebraska Cornhuskers for football.
Well, and I don't want to get too far into this, but the guy doesn't have to love the game to be good at the game. Bo Jackson didn't love the game. He was very open about that. He didn't love the game, but he was very good at it. And he's the same kind of player you're talking about, though. He just loves sport, and he was very good at both sports, and he played both sports. And apparently, you know, I don't know that Bubba's going to be good enough to play one sport, let alone both. But, you know, he didn't love the game necessarily. He loved sport, and he just was good at what he did, and he got paid. Barry Sanders, he's come out and said, I retired because it was my job, and I just didn't enjoy doing it anymore. I didn't love the game. It was just a job, and I was tired of doing it. And I've made enough money, and I had taken care of myself, so I'm done. You know, but he was probably the greatest running back of all time, arguably.
Yeah, and I mean, Bo Jackson's a decent example, but, I mean, he was such a different case than anything. Like, he was just such a phenomenon, and I mean, you could easily argue that he was pretty overrated as a baseball player. I mean, had his career actually gone further than it did and wasn't cut short, you know, who knows what kind of a player he would have been remembered as. But, I mean, I just, like, Michael Jordan didn't love the game, and he, you know, never made it past double-A ball. And, you know, I don't know a bunch of examples off the top of my head, but, I mean, you can, like, if you're just an absolute, just ungodly freak, I suppose you can not love it. I mean, I think on some level you have to have a pretty big drive to be that good, and that's the ultimate question.
Well, a lot of it comes down to facing adversity and working on different elements. And for Bubba, a lot of it is just being able to make contact enough so that he can take advantage of the power. And so that's where if that drive isn't there, he could run into the problem of, you know, not being all the way in and making those adjustments and putting in that work. And not to say that he's lazy, but just to say that, you know, in the back of his mind, it's not necessarily an obsession with him. He doesn't feel like he has to be the best. And maybe he does. Maybe that's completely wrong. I don't know. I haven't been able to sit down and pick his brain about that. So I don't know what his mindset is exactly on that. But it does seem like for a lot of different athletes that they can pick which sport is their passion and they pour themselves into it. You know, you look at guys like John Elway, who was good enough to be drafted by a lot of teams in Major League Baseball, but he wanted to play football and became one of the best at football. Here's a weird example. Look at a guy like Charlie Ward, who was fantastic as a college quarterback, but didn't want to play football. And maybe he wasn't good enough for the NFL, but he went and played basketball, and he put in the work to become, you know, a very reasonable backup guard and part-time starter for the Knicks. And, you know, he just wanted to do it and went out and did it.
And back then, basketball players were getting paid a sick amount of money. So
they're still getting paid a sick amount of money. They're all getting paid a sick amount of money. It's not...
So I would play this through my speakers if I could, but I can't. But do you know that the Man Cave people did – well, first off, did you know that there's an official website of Jeff Francoeur?
Not surprised at all.
There's an official –
I've been doing this show. You can go to jefffrancoeur.com. It's an official Jeff Francoeur website. I've been although it has the 2011 Royals schedule, so I don't know how official it is or if it's somebody trying to – whoever's running it is doing a crap job with it.
They're just remembering the good times.
Apparently. But they do updates on Francoeur, and apparently in July 17, 2012 – how we missed this, I don't know. There was a Jeff Francoeur tribute song. But if you want to hear it, you can find the link off of jefffrancoeur.com. So I only found this because my fiance has been having me show Royals players that she thinks are sexy to her sister and her sister's friend that are sitting behind me. So we had to go through Jonathan Broxton, who is her favorite.
What? Hold on.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Hold on. What? Are you serious?
He can't hear you, so that's the only bad thing about this is because my headset.
Right, I know. I know. I just, that's it.
Jonathan Broxton?
Hold on a second. What?
It's a bold, you can't believe it. Bold
that's
move.
The one. Meanwhile, I'm showing the picture of Jonathan Broxton's pants, which will be one of my favorite pictures of all time,
yes.
with two Royals inside of Jonathan Broxton's pants. So it is the greatest picture ever. But you know, the guy's done well in his life. He's made a lot of money. He's got you know, a beautiful wife, and you can't really knock anybody that is getting paid to play baseball. So
I'm gonna anyway.
So, you're going to anyways.
Yes.
He, like, came out for the Reds the other day, and he got, like, 3 Ks or something. I was like, where's the Jonathan Broxton that played for the Royals? This is not nearly as entertaining. I'm not going to watch Reds late innings if Jonathan Broxton isn't going to fall apart.
Give it time. So, give it time.
But anyways, yes, go check out the official Jeff Francoeur website and Jonathan's pants if you've never seen. Just search Jonathan Broxton's pants, and then go look at the images if you haven't ever seen it.
And then clear your search history.
Google search.
Yeah.
Yeah, clear the history.
Good luck. We hope that Jason can turn around his season off to a real rough start. I think he's still in the game, but he's getting hit around pretty good. No, he's out of the game now. Oh, Brooks Pounders is in.
Brooks Pounders.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault edition of the Northwest Arkansas pitching staff. So Pounders came in and got out of the fifth inning, but the Naturals are down to Midland, Texas, 7-1. And Jason, 4.2 innings pitched, or 4 2/3 innings pitched, 8 hits, 7 runs, all earned, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, and 2 home runs.
It's a different league.
You know what they say, happens to the best of us.
Big jump. He'll bounce. He'll bounce back.
We're, of course, in his... We love Jason, and we hope he figures it out because we want him to do well. So, but we're rambling. Oh, I did have one more thing. A big shout out to our friend, one of our few international listeners, and he is loyal to Royals Podcast, both RoyalsPodcast.com and the other Royals shows that are out there, the two that are on there, and anything else that's out there. But it's, I believe it's Royals. God, what is it? Royals FUD, I think, is what it is, but it's Royals Fan Down Under, and I don't have his name in front of me because my email has scrolled away, but he has told me that if we ever don't have a guest and we just want somebody to fill in, he'd love to come on and talk about what it's like being in Australia, being a Royals fan, and I'm quickly Googling what time it is in Australia right now to see if there was any chance that he was on just out of the blue if we did call him at a time like this, but I mean, it's 12:38 p.m., so it's tomorrow. It's Saturday there. They're about a half a day ahead of us or so. And yeah, so it's 12:38 in the afternoon in Australia right now. So we might have to take him up on that at some point. Come on, because I think it would be interesting to find out how you could be an American baseball fan in a whole different hemisphere. So
we gotta ask him if the Royals won tomorrow.
Time travel jokes are funny.
Oh, they're great, isn't it?
Well, next week, probably around this time, I'll get the episode up tonight because I only have one computer, so I have to take advantage.
Sushi, of course.
Yes, I'm going to go have sushi first because it's 2 for $10 tonight.
Okay.
I'm gonna head out to some sushi. If you're in the Phoenix area and you hear this before Saturday night, head on over to Mesa and check out the Mesa Men's Roller Derby team, which is the Phoenix, this is awful. Phoenix Rattle Skates. It's going to be quite the event tomorrow night over in Mesa. It's the first are going to have a juniors battle, and then the main event is the men's team versus 12 women from two of the top Arizona roller derby leagues that are going to be the Snake Hunters, and they're going to be off against the men's team, so a little men versus women. And I haven't called I've done some scrimmages with men's versus women's, but I think it'll be interesting to see roller derby women try to match up against the mass that is the men's team. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you listen to this show, I'd love to meet you because there can't be too many Royals fans out here. So give me a shout and come on by. Get Mason tomorrow for more details. You can hit Twitter for Mason Royal Man. Of course, you can always email the show at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com or RoyalManReport@gmail.com. But go check out Kelly's. Check out KingsKaufman.com and EchoNetwork.com and RoyalsPodcast.com. But until next week, for Aaron Stilley and Jeff Herr and Michael Engel, I am Troy Olson, beautiful Flagstaff, Arizona. Have a great week, everybody. Good night. Go Royals. Apparently I'm the only one that thinks it's hot, so I'm going to take the polo off.
It's getting hot in here.
I wish I could have the sound coming out of the TV so some of these other people in the room could appreciate our jokes.
I don't think anybody really appreciates our jokes.
Well, April, Megan's sister, you know, is a hotshot. She's that's what's called the Wildland Firefighters. And one of her friends is over here, and I said, excuse me while I do the geekiest thing that somebody could possibly do and record this podcast and look like a damn fool.
Well, it's okay.
I had to go buy a headset. I was so sad. Okay, let's get this rolling, because I got sushi waiting for me apparently after we're done. So now I really want to be done.
Oh, he moves out west, and now it's sushi.
Oh, all of a sudden this big sushi guy.
Let's see, yeah, big timer. Oh, yeah.
Bus he's Troy. Recording. Troy, is it still recording? Type if it's still recording. Yes, it's still recording. Okay, then.